You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Welcome to the 5 Year Plan Podcast.
Hey!
Pod 395. And it's the pod after Palace have beaten Tottenham Hotspur 3-0 at Selhurst Park. Patrick Vieira's first... Exactly. I mean, you can only laugh. Patrick Vieira's first win as Palace boss. And what a way to get that result. Cannot wait to discuss that game with Kevin Day. Hello to you.
Hello.
I mean, you're laughing already, so I'm guessing you're in a pretty good mood this week.
Yeah, and it's raining.
Exactly. Ticking all your boxes. Fantastic. Andy Street is here. Hello to you.
Hello.
That sounds like a chirpy hello from Andy Street. How you doing?
Well, you see, I'm just thinking through in my head. I'm triangulating the best way to wind Kevin up, and I've got one or two ideas already. So we'll see how those develop.
You're winding me up as each week goes by, and you look more and more like Russell Howard. That's really winding me up.
I don't know if that's a compliment or an insult or both.
Both.
Either way, I'll take it.
How do you come back from that? Well, we've got a debutante making up our panel today. So please welcome Grace Matheson. Grace, thank you very much for joining us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It is great to have you here. And I'm guessing, like the other two, you're in good spirits this week after that result.
I am, yes. Who wouldn't be?
Exactly. We're going to get on to talking about that. Well, we've got loads to get through this week. Before we do that, though, can I get a drum roll for a random patron, please? Superb. It's Julie Barnett.
Hey, Julie.
Hi, Julie.
Hello, Julie. Welcome to our Patreon. You can get all the rewards like Julie does at our Patreon, including post-match podcast, patron-only merchandise, and access to the patron-only WhatsApp club at patreon.com/FYP podcast. Kevin, it's the time to remind people about the live podcast on Thursday, the 11th of November. There's about 35 tickets left. We're not revealing the special guest yet, but it's going to be a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, have we still not booked him? Is that why?
he's down as a maybe. He's considering it. He's still thinking about it.
No, he's a very special guest.
Yes, that would be good. So tickets are £10 each. Get them at eventbrite.co.uk. They're on general sale now. I suspect they will sell out pretty quickly. So get your hands on that if you want one. It's at the Streatham Space Project in Streatham Hill, Thursday, the 11th of November. A quick thank you to everyone that bought a copy of FYP Times OMP. I think that's how the kids say it these days. New fanzine edition that came out at the weekend, edited by Chris Lehman, editor or former editor, I guess current editor of One More Point fanzine. Thank you so much for everyone that bought a copy, and well done to Chris, and thank you to Chris for taking that on and producing a fantastic edition of the fanzine. One of our listeners, Sue Saville, hi Sue, has said, never mind the pod. All right, Sue. Thank you for an thank you for an excellent edition of FYP. Yes, and a good thank you to Chris for doing that. That was great. Copies are still available. You can get an e-copy, so an electronic copy. I don't need to explain that. Which you can sort of download to your Kindle or your phone or whatever. Which is £1 from the website, which is fypfanzine.uk/shop. But if you want a paper copy, DM us on any social media platform, and we will send you details on how you can order a paper copy that Chris will send to your door. And I think that's the admin all done. Oh no, wait, merchandise. Do you know what? We do merchandise every week. We're going to do it again next week. I'm taking up precious time. We could be talking, Kevin, about a 3-0 win over league leaders Tottenham. Vieira's first win in charge. Goals for Edouard. Where do we start with this one?
This is pod 395, you say?
Yeah.
So in that time, we've probably reviewed 420, 430 games.
Yeah.
And we'll have had a wide range of scenarios ranging from, my God, that was terrible, never going again, to, hey, it was all right, to, that was a good win. We never in all that time have we ever had a scenario where we comfortably matched the league leaders unbeaten in the first half and outplayed them in the second half and deserved to win 3-0, to the extent that in the pub afterwards, everyone spent the first 10 minutes reassuring themselves that we had just watched that amazing performance. Everyone's going, it's not just me, that was brilliant, wasn't it? I actually felt sorry for Gaeta, because he's the only one who didn't get a mention. Literally every other player was mentioned as potential man of the match, and not Vicente, because he had one save to stop, and he did it. It was a remarkable performance. I genuinely can't remember a better performance. It's certainly not in the Premier League, and certainly not over the course of 90 minutes. It was fantastic.
And well, I'm going to give you a few minutes, maybe longer, to have a rack your brains and have a think, because one of our questions coming up later on is that the best ever performance we've seen since getting promoted?
I think I just categorically said I can't remember a better 90 minutes. So
all right, well, yes, maybe think of one. So, yeah, just see how you get
that on. Feature's going to be an absolute winner, Jay, you know, coming up on this.
It's not a feature, it's one question. One question. All right, fine, I won't ask it later, fine. Grace, Kevin makes a good point there. It was such a deserved, it wasn't a smash and grab, and we've had plenty of smash and grabs over the last couple of years. It was a well-deserved victory where, almost to a man, they were better than Spurs across the pitch. It wasn't even luck involved.
It wasn't, and it felt special sort of about, I think it was about the 10th minute, I looked at the clock and thought, hang on, we might be able to do something here, having gone into the game thinking that I'd be absolutely delighted with a point, to be honest. And then from about the 10th minute onwards, we really just grew into it. And like you say, matched them comfortably in the first half. And then in the second half, just completely outplayed them. And then I think from the minute that Tanganga shoved over Wilf, there was only going to be one outcome when Selhurst was like it was. We got the 3-0 win.
Yeah, that's a good point, Andy, actually, the second half showing, because that's now second game in a row where Palace have come out after half-time and been very, very strong. We talked before about the West Ham game, about the half-time at West Ham being a bit of a moment for Vieira in his sort of early Palace career. And yet again, they came out strong in the second half. I can't quite remember a time where Palace were so strong in the second half, but it's starting to become a bit of a feature of sort of Vieira's Palace.
I think there's two factors for me that have got to be important in that. And the first one is just the significantly improved, younger and more mobile defence, which just means that we play so much higher pitch. I mean, you look at the fact that Harry Kane, probably one of the best strikers in the world, and I don't think that's a controversial statement at all, didn't have a single touch inside the box, I think I'm right in saying, during the entire 90 minutes. Didn't have a shot, let alone a shot on target, I think, is right as well. And quite key, I think, is that now across that back line, three out of the four just have ridiculous recovery pace. Like, even if they lose their man, they're back on him straight away. And that just means that, you know, they're playing so much higher up the pitch, and I think that will put pressure on the opposition in the way that previously we weren't. And then part of that previous point, but I think more widely across the entire squad, is just the younger age now. You know, if you're playing 23 and 24 year olds across the park, you're not going to tire in the same way physically as you will if the average age is 29, 30, 31, 32, because we all know how tired 30-somethings get. obviously, we'll see whether or not it's just an early season thing or if it's just a small sample size of games. There's a really good piece in on the FYP website today by Mike Wicks about some of the different stats metrics and how different we're looking. But I mean, it's certainly encouraging, if nothing less than the games that we've seen so far.
Well, it wasn't just stronger in the second half, it was stronger at the end of the second half as well, which we haven't seen for a long. We haven't seen a Palace team that's still chasing, still got energy in the 93rd, 94th minute. And I thought it was interesting that Wilf said afterwards that he hated Vieira in the first 2 weeks because it was just fitness training. It was all double sessions. And now he feels that he's fitter than he's ever been. And you can see that in the team. And also, you mentioned the three young players at the back. I think I owe Wardy an apology because I'd written him off this season. And again, he was fantastic. He had a really, really good game. I thought he was excellent. And it hasn't quite got the pace, but he's got the intelligence. And some of his recovery tackles were amazing. But the back four is just a different animal. And it's about attitude as well. It's not just about a change of personnel. It's about a change of attitude in the way we defend as well, I think.
Yeah, I have to admit, Wardy and Mitchell, I both thought started quite slowly. And I was starting to think, those are the areas we need to sort of maybe improve or look at. But actually, they both grew into the game so well, especially Mitchell, I thought, just really, really improved. And I don't know if that is just an example of the confidence or the sort of new, I don't know, the new way that Vieira is making this team play. But yeah, defence is definitely good. We have a couple of questions from people, so I'll read them out now. Russell Levy.
Hi, Russell.
Has said, it's a lengthy one. Here we go. Although Zaha, Edouard and Gallagher stole the media spotlight against Spurs, for me, it's the man of the match was Anderson. I would go so far as to say this is the single greatest individual performance I can recall from a Palace player ever. We love a bit of hyperbole on this podcast. From his calmness in defending situations to his willingness to receive possession in any circumstance, and ultimately his incredible distribution, I thought it was a flawless display. Agree? Question mark. And then JCPFC, which is our friend Jack, says, does Mark Guehi have the potential to become club captain? Grace, they're both on five-year deals. Without getting too carried away, it's only four games in. This could be a very special partnership.
I think so. I mean, you would never know that they're as young as they are and that they've never played together prior to this season, because it almost, to me, I almost don't notice them, which sort of indicates how well they're doing their job, that they've just slotted straight in and their performances are so mature and you just feel assured that they're going to do exactly what they've been put in there to do. And like you say, it is early days, but I'm excited to see how they develop and go forward and play a really important part in pushing up the pitch.
Yeah, and that, and we said before, Kevin, haven't we, that the spine of the team is obviously incredibly important, and it is one that we knew over recent years was I'm going to use the word creaking, but was obviously getting older, and so needs to be upgraded. I will just chuck in really quickly, I was Googling while you guys are talking, that Harry Kane stat, that is the first time ever, by the way, that he's never had a touch in an opposition
or a shot on target.
Which is some stat, really. But we knew, Kevin, didn't we, that the defence had to be upgraded at some point, but it seems to be upgraded superbly.
I don't know if it was the single greatest performance by a Palace player ever. As a Jerry Murphy fan, obviously, I'm going to take exception to that. But, you know, we are second to none on this pod in our devotion to Damien Delaney. But you think back to some of those times when Damien was trying those little golf passes across the midfield, and you kind of, and then you look at Anderson, and one of his passes, a 65-yard pass to Wilf, which literally landed in front of Wilf with a bit of backspin for, and I know we're going to talk about Wilf in great detail later on. His distribution was amazing, but I think Grace makes a really good point in that you don't visibly really notice what they're doing, because it's not like Saka. You always knew that Saka was there defending because he was charging around trying to recover things that he'd lost. You know, Saka's tackles were very visible, his defending was very visible. With those two, it's just a quiet sort of competence. It's just, and the same with the fullbacks, they just got on with it, shielded really well by Kiati, who had another one who had a really good game. And it was just like we had a look at them in the first half, and it's almost, you think Vieira second half said to them, because I think we all said at half time we may have missed the opportunity here, we should have been a goal up. Tottenham are going to be better second half. And we just didn't expect it to be us that stepped up another gear. And then when they went down to 10 men, they stepped up another gear. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, actually, there was points after the first goal. We won the ball back so quickly.
Yeah.
I was expecting Spurs to have a bit of, you know, a bit of time. And obviously, when you concede a goal, it's a famous cliche. You're always vulnerable. We had it back straight away looking for a second, but I haven't seen Palace do that for a long time. And talking about Anderson, there was one point in the first half where he sprayed it out to Wilf. And the next thing he was doing an overlapping run. Like, this guy's got everything. What is he doing? And again, we haven't seen that for a very, very long time. I've got a question here, Kevin, that you nearly sort of touched on there. And it does feel like an Andy Street question. So I'm going to go to Andy with it. It's from Daniel Harris. Harrison.
Hi, Daniel.
Is it a really open question? I'm going to answer with a yes, no.
No, it is closed, but we'll see how you handle it. But he said, Daniel says, were Spurs that bad that they made us look good? And then Daniel adds, I think we were amazing, but I just want to see your take on it.
Yes and no. They were bad. They were objectively bad, in my view. That they didn't press in the way they normally would. That they look pretty lethargic. I think they were missing some of the players who ended up falling foul of Brazilian coronavirus regulations and so forth. They didn't really look at the races equally. You know, it's still a top six side, and a top six side still playing badly will generally be significantly better than a team of Palace's ilk. And Palace still played very, very well. So, I mean, I don't think it's damning Palace with faint praise to say that Tottenham weren't particularly good and they did have a man sent off. Ultimately, Palace forced them onto the back foot, and Tanganga was it was a turning point in the match, and they were down to 10 men, but they were down to 10 men because they were starting to struggle with some of the pace that Wolf was showing, getting in behind and getting too touch tight to him. So I think you still have to give Palace credit out of all that situation, and I don't think it has to be one or the other, frankly.
Son was a big miss for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I still think, we played better than them. We were the better team all the way through for 90 minutes. And it was interesting talking to Tottenham fans afterwards and looking at their message boards where they're absolutely furious with Nuno, because there was a kind of Roy Hodgson reaction from Nuno, which was not much. He could see what was unfolding in front of him, and he didn't make the changes that they needed to make to save. So I was a bit distracted by the manservant walking behind you.
That is a famous Crystal Palace fan, Barry, from the Porsons. Barry's at my house.
Barry just lurked into shock.
Some people will do anything to get on the podcast, including...
It's our second ever live pod.
We'd love to have Barry on the pod. Barry would be great on the pod.
Barry would be actually fantastic value on the pod.
And again, Vieira did the things that we've all been jealous of other managers doing. Vieira made positive changes at the right time.
Yeah.
And they paid off. And again, we have to say, well, Hodgson didn't have the manpower to make those changes.
Yep.
Which is so, you know, I still get a bit antsy when people go, oh, Vieira's a better manager than Hodgson. It's like, he's not. But Hodgson just didn't have the potential. He didn't have the squad. But just at the end of that game, I can't remember being so excited. And also, as we talked about the second half at West Ham, we thought, well, can we do that again? And lo and behold, we did. It's just like,
I make that 16 minutes before we mention Roy Hodgson, which it's getting longer, which pod, but you know.
But it's just in terms of, you know, we always accuse Roy of being negative, and yes, he was. But, you know, like he used to say when he had that famous rant supporters group, what am I doing? Bringing Chung Yong Lee on? Says, you'll boo me for that.
And Vieira did give credit to Roy Hodgson in the post match press conference as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, it's always going to be difficult because it's always going to form the contextual backdrop, isn't it, to anything that Vieira does. And I think fans always necessarily, because they became entrenched in one view or the other, can always have to define their views of Patrick Vieira almost in most circumstances by reference to that. But, yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll start to mention them less and less.
Well, the manager, I don't think we were mentioning the manager before Roy Hodgson at all anymore. That voodoo seems to have been laid. I thought it was brilliant as well that Vieira gave Benteke a lot of praise afterwards for the hard work. It was my favourite moment in the Porsons afterwards was when there was a young lad who was in our company. So I felt really sorry for Benteke because all Edouard did was be in the right place at the right time. It's like, yes, that's exactly what a striker should be doing. That's exactly his job. Just happened to fortunately be in the right place at the right time twice and get those two lucky goals.
We'll come on to Edouard in a bit, I do want to obviously talk about that because that is a big talking point. I will just say as well that as Selzy says on the post-match pod, you can only sort of beat what's put in front of you. And it's absolutely right. The Spurs did have injury issues and obviously lost a defender early on. Had to then reshuffle again when Tanganga got sent off. So a lot of things did go away at the weekend. But as you know, as Selzy says, you can only beat what's in front of you. And as Andy says, Palace were excellent in doing that. Before we get on to Edouard, let's just talk about the Tanganga red then. Grace, at the time, it looked... Well, obviously, it came from Palace not putting the ball out and Mitchell plays it down the line and Spurs are incensed, which is kind of understandable. But then Tanganga goes... Wolf goes past Tanganga and it looks to me like he sort of took him out on replay. You can see him put his hand on basically on the side of Wolf's face. And then, which Wolf's obviously not happy about. Both get yellows. I actually think in hindsight, I don't know if VAR reviewed it. It could have maybe been a straight red for Tanganga there for the hands on the face. And then obviously 5 minutes later, he does a reckless challenge right in front of the ref and goes, what were your thoughts on the initial challenge on Wolf?
Yeah, I mean, where I sit, we're in the sort of on the halfway line in the Arthur Waite. So we had a really good view of it sort of from behind. So we could see straight away that his hand was much higher than the usual shove and that it was on Wilf's face. And from we know Wilf does tend to react, but even by his standards, we knew that this was something he felt he'd been seriously wronged by from his reaction. I thought there were going to be punches thrown at one point. It looked that sort of level. But yeah, it was just... Well, obviously, no intention of doing anything other than wiping out Wilf, which is exactly what he did. And yeah, that on its own could have been a straight red, and if not, a yellow for that, and then a yellow for his reaction, because he didn't walk away from Wilf. He stood there and continued to antagonise. So yeah, I think he was lucky that he lasted the extra however many minutes it was he lasted on the pitch.
It was about 4 minutes, I think, in total. Kevin, I saw a great tweet from Danny Gabadon, former Palace defender, who said Tanganga wound up Wilf, made Wilf mad, and then left his teammates to deal with the consequences, which is exactly what happened.
It was a little bit like the Bournemouth game, wasn't it, when Wilf, they wound him up to the extent that he decided he's going to have to win that game single-handedly. But luckily, I saw Jonathan Pearce was at a gig I did last night, who was the commentator on Saturday, so I was able to drunkenly accost him afterwards, and because he'd said, yellow card for Wilf was lucky to stay on, should have been a red card for Zaha. It's like, that was a straight red, straight away from Tanganga, both hands on his face. That was a straight red. And also, what's interesting about Danny Gabadon's tweet is you could see the Tottenham players, when he went in for that second yellow card, they all just turned away from him, just like they knew it was going to happen. And I thought Ayew did brilliantly. I mean, Ayew did him like a kipper, basically. He lured him in like Andy Street lures people in with sarcasm. Yeah, I mean,
not just sarcasm, thank you very much, Kevin. Sometimes sneering, sometimes just...
but it's one of those rare occasions when you think that's it. We're going to win this game. Simple as that. You could see from Tottenham's body language that they didn't really adjust or make changes or reshuffle. And then we got the penalty, and the penalty was a strange one because I was slightly distracted by the fact that for 15 brief seconds, everybody was on the right hand side of the pitch. We're obviously quite close to Grace in the half away. There was no one on our side of the pitch because suddenly Wilf was over there and Tyreek was over there and everyone was over there for some reason. And we did, so it was really tight. And we did four brilliant passes and suddenly the cross is going in for a penalty. It's fantastic.
Well, it was a good spot from the line-o, actually, because, again, I remember thinking at the time, that's way too close to be a penalty. You can't give it for that. But actually, again, on replay, you can see his hands are really quite far out. So it was a great spot from the line-o to spot that, and a lovely little build-up as well to create the chance.
Does anyone know why Wilf took the penalty?
No,
because he's really good at penalties.
Well, no, but Luca was on the pitch, wasn't he?
Did someone say that MacArthur, who was captain, I think possibly not overruled, but gave the ball to Wilf and said that Wilf is on pen. So I'd imagine maybe something they decided pre-game, but then obviously decided to stick with it once the time to take it came on. But
I suppose Luca hadn't been on all that long. He'd been on 15 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, no, lovely penalty.
It was a shocking penalty.
It was good. It went in.
The keeper, I hate to sound like Andy Street here, but the keeper had stood up, he would have could have walked over and collected it. It was a terrible. As you say, it went in. You're right.
Listen, I do want to talk about obviously the two goals after that from Edouard, but we'll save that for part two with our Athletic article because it is on forward line chat. Before I do that, really quickly, from a question from Jesse Boys. It's an open-ended question, so of course it's going to go to Andy Street. And big shout out to Jesse as well for designing the FYP Times or versus, I don't know what kids say, OMP edition. Did a great job as ever. The front cover, there's a Gallagher theme front cover. It's absolutely brilliant. So well done for Jesse. I mean, he's never short of brilliant when he does these things. Anyway, his question is, when have we got more carried away than this after winning one game? Are you carried away?
I think probably the last time we won one game. No, Palace fans. When was, gosh, not for a long while. Certainly not since, God, a really long time. probably towards the end of the Allardyce season, when we were sort of seeing off a couple of the really good teams and everyone all of a sudden thought that the following season we would be making a march for Europe. Whereupon possibly we probably the lost, end of that, lost that. Our manager, appointed a completely unsuitable basket case of a manager, ended up with the worst Premier League start of all time, ended up having to bring in Roy after four games, didn't win for eight. Yeah, I think probably then.
That sounds about right.
Just to bring you all back down to earth.
That also welcome. Sounds like a phrase that starts with a T and ends in, I'm not going to say it. I think we should stop part one there and go on to part two.
What's the phrase?
Well, I was going to say starts with a T and ends with an Ipical Palace, but I mean, then I basically said the phrase, haven't I? So I'm just not going to bother. Right, that was seamless. After the break, we're going to discuss an article from The Athletic.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Welcome back to the Father Pan Podcast.
Hey! We're all going on here.
I knew it was coming. Surprised it's taken this long, actually, to be honest. Right, part two is an Athletic part. This week was sponsored by The Athletic, bringing you every football story that matters. The Athletic is home to the best collection of football reporters, storytellers, and analysis in the world, from breaking club news and exclusive interviews to brilliant features and tactical analysis. The Athletic is football news you can trust and football writing you can feel. Get an all access to exclusive stories ad free. And if you go to theathletic.com/FYP, you can get 50% off your annual subscription. That's just 30 quid for the year for sports journalism that brings you closer to the action. Really enjoying the new copy they've sent me. It's much more fun than the old stuff.
And they've got refer a friend thingies as well that I keep getting emails about. So I don't have any friends to refer, but it's one of the benefits if you do.
The 30-day trial, isn't it? You can pass on.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's very good, actually. Yeah. Well, if you want to be Andy's friend as well, then hit him up and I'm sure he can sort you out with the pass.
I think it's probably worth far more than that.
This week's article is by Matt Wisdom and it says electrifying Zaha and stellar support cast hint at bright Palace future. So we're finally going to get a chance to talk about Odson Edouard. I'll read a clip from the feature here. It says, keeping his cool to not react too aggressively to Tanganga and risk a red card himself before the first defender then walked for a second bookable offence after lunging on Jordan Ayew soon afterwards was to Zaha's credit. For so long, there has been little in Palace's side to take the pressure off Zaha. And even in the early stages of the season, it was unclear whether anyone other than Gallagher could offer that over the coming months. But the recruitment team Treem. The recruitment team deserve credit once again for acquiring players who appear to offer something in that respect. Olise's introduction from the bench with 5 minutes remaining for an injury-delayed debut proved influential as he played a significant part in the third goal, while Edouard was spectacularly clinical in front of goal, just as he demonstrated at Celtic. Vieira's demand was for Palace to stretch the opposition a little bit more, as we had players on the wing who were really good in 1v1, with really good pace too. And that was offered here by Zaha and latterly Olise. Kevin, we have talked a little bit about Wilf in part one and his reaction to the red card. But let's talk about Odson Edouard, because that first goal, 28 seconds after coming on, is another Premier League record, 2-1 game this week. The fastest ever goal in the Premier League, so obviously after 92, that by a substitute. Just talk us through your emotion and your reaction to that and the second goal when they went in.
Are we going to talk about Wilf as well afterwards?
Yeah, we can do.
Because I think we should do, because I think you know Grace sits quite close. I'm sure she'd agree that in the second half particularly, it was just proper thrilling and exciting to see Wilf back at his best. I mean, it was just we sometimes talk about this, you know Wilf, he's in, he's out. Bellassi was maybe better than him. And then sometimes you just see him play like that and you realise what a good player he is. And also, I think what was really interesting, we haven't mentioned the midfield at all in this pod, really, but Gallagher and Maka, nearly every time Wilf got the ball, they were close to him. They were protecting him and they were making an option for him to give them the ball if they wanted it. And they were making sure that people were marking them so Wilf was getting space. So clearly they've worked on liberating Wilf, and he looked liberated. He looked like he was really enjoying it. Edouard, I just don't. It's one of those things we're talking about afterwards. You know, does a striker consciously think, right, I'm going to control it with this foot, hit it with that foot, or is it instinct? But it's just two goals, the likes of which we rarely, rarely see at Palace, from probably Dougie Freeman, Andy Johnson. That just that instinct to make the right first touch, create a little bit of space for yourself. The first goal was really interesting because he was really close to Wilf. There's a long ball out from the end. It sort of went over his head. And you kind of think, if that was Ayew, he would have just bumped into Wilf and they would have like dodging cars. But he just had the sense to peel away, trusted that Wilf was going to get the ball in the box. That first touch, second touch, and the finish was actually fantastic. The media didn't really pick up on how good that finish was because he had very little of the goal to aim at going across the keeper. And then the second one, the keeper got a hand to it, but it just, his positioning, just, like I say, he just did what a striker's supposed to do, just pulled up. And it's still going to be really interesting to see whether Benteke starts again as the battering ram to soften defences up before bringing Edouard on. But you can't get a better day. These stories like that don't normally happen to us.
No.
And it's interesting as well, because I noticed Matt Woosen picked up on that at the start of that Athletic article, that Wilf and Odson were doing a lot of media stuff together and both looked really happy. You know, my only slight quibble is that Gallagher seems to think that Edouard's his first name, because he kept referring to him in interviews afterwards. Like, Edouard was really good. Wasn't Edouard good? Like, that's his second name, mate.
Maybe he's just being very formal. Just
maybe he thinks that's how they do it in Scotland.
Mr. Edouard
was really good.
Grace, it was when he took a touch from Wilf, and Kevin's right, actually, the movement was fantastic because they were close together, and then Wilf went out wide and Edouard's movement into the box was very good. But he takes that first touch. He does a little sort of half hop skip kind of thing to get his body into position and then hits the left foot shot, and it does take a slight deflection and goes in, but that is a real striker's instinct inside the box. And I guess same for the second one as well, lets it ride across his body, hits it first time. We haven't really seen a striker with that kind of instinct really for a while, have we?
No, it has been a while. And actually, funnily enough, I was checking, it's actually 11 years ago today that James Vaughan got his hat-trick against Portsmouth. Which was another good debut. But yeah, we've been, over the years, since however long, been looking for someone with that killer instinct that the minute the ball is at their foot, you know, it's only going in one place. Yeah. And it was really refreshing and enjoyable that it actually found its way into the back of the net rather than into the crowd or off for a corner. And yeah, he made it look so easy and effortless that hopefully we'll see many more of that to come after we've been hit with the sort of been the lesser known version of could Messi do it on a Tuesday night in Stoke, and it's all been for can Edouard do it on a Saturday in the Premier League, and it turns out that he can, so hopefully he can keep it up.
Yeah, you're right. It definitely it shakes off that pub league, you know, tag from Scotland very early doors, which is great for him, but also great for us. Paul Knight has sent us a question.
Hi, Paul.
Well, in fact, it's not a question because he starts off by saying, not a question, but Edouard's movement for the goal was exactly what we've missed. Made life difficult for the centre-back to ensure Wilf to get the ball, and then Buster got into the penalty spot. Loved it. Lee John Hughes.
Hi, Lee.
Oh, I saw Palace tweet this. Ed's Oddsons. I'm doing it now as well. Oddson's XG is predicted 300 plus goals this season. And we've got a lot to live up to. Got to keep that stat going. And then Jamie Penston-Raja, who's one of our regulars, says, Edouard starts now, surely. Benteke once again looks bereft of confidence. Ooh, don't know about that. We surely can't do another season of trying to boost his confidence when Edouard is knocking on the door like this. Andy, actually, I think Kevin made a good point there that actually using Benteke to sort of soften up the defences and then have Edouard come on. That's actually quite a good way of doing it, isn't it? And I don't think Benteke looked short of confidence on Saturday, did you?
I thought he played well.
No, I'd agree with that. I thought he played well until he was taken off. And obviously, it remains to be seen whether or not Edouard would lead the line for the entirety of the game in the same way. Obviously, he's a sort of super sharp finisher that I don't think we've had since Kevin Phillips. And Kevin Phillips we had well after his prime.
Yeah.
But the sort of player where, you know, I even look back to that playoff final now and... I know others said that they were nervous on that penalty being taken, but I wasn't because it was Kevin Phillips. And you wonder whether or not Edouard will be that same sort of finisher where you kind of know every time he hits it, yeah, that's it. And certainly some of the finishes he showed up in Scotland, he did seem to be, you know, instinctive finishes of every type. Sometimes those types of players don't translate well to playing all 90 minutes in every Premier League game. You know, Dwight Gale was a fantastic finisher, didn't always look fantastic over 90 minutes, and he's not the only example of that. So I think we'll have to see. Ultimately, when you have a debut that's that sensational, you're obviously going to have earned a few starts. It would be pretty churlish of him not to then be started. I've got to say, like, in terms of a scale of excitement, right, you go from like there, which is just not yet being at the match, to there, which is like Danny Butterfield hat-trick, perfect hat-trick against Wolves, where you're sort of like elated to the point of like laughing. I was getting up to 9 out of 10 Butterfields, I think, for that Edouard Frank hat-trick. So I think that speaks volumes about how good it was.
You say he's guaranteed a start, but Mateta scored a backheel nutmeg against Brighton. We never saw him again. I mean, that
but he did all equally, even in that game, Mateta didn't really do much else in the game and looked pretty poor. And I know we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, it's going to be phenomenally difficult for Oddson Edouard to live up to that sort of start, not least given the stat that JD's come out with there about imputed goals of 364 over the course of a season. I imagine he's probably only going to get to about 200.
Which will be a disappointment, and we should sell him at the end of the season if he only gets that.
JD, talking of stats, you remember a while ago when Keith Millen was on the pod, Tony Pulis was manager, and we said we beat Villa 1-0 and we were delighted because we said we had 32% possession. Yeah. We were really pleased, and Millen went, no, the boss went mad. Gaffer was furious. Said any more than
30%. Show the players that.
It's any more than 30%. He said we don't know what to do with the ball, but we had 62% possession on Saturday against Tottenham, and not a pass or barely a pass was wasted. So I mean that's another huge change for us in the last 7 or 8 seasons in the Premier League, that we had more of the ball than Spurs, but we also used it really well. And we passed it really quickly, and we held on to it when we had to. And I think we have to keep reminding ourselves, Spurs were top for the second game running. We played the team at the top of the table, and we scored 5 goals in those games. You know, and that puts Edouard's goals into context as well, because Tottenham just conceded that first goal in 3.5 games. So this is a team with a really good defence. No matter who's in and who's out for them, this is a team with a really well-drilled defence. And suddenly Edouard's popping up, scoring 2 goals against them.
And that, you're right about the possession. I'd forgotten about that, but I remember reading that after the game. And also I saw Andrew McSteen, who's a local reporter for the South London Press, tweet out that 3 of the Palace back 4 are in the top 6 for passes this season. So Anderson, Gueye, Ward have already got over 200 passes, and Mitchell's not far behind. So that really does, again, I'm heavily stats-based this week, but that does show the transition that the team are making towards this more progressive style, that and possession. It really is, Grace, a bit uncharted territory for Palace, but it's not used to this kind of thing.
It is, and I think that stat you just said, I think I also read somewhere that that made Joel Ward up to nearly 25% already of the passes that he'd completed in the whole of last season.
Wow.
Which sort of really puts it into perspective that we are, and Vieira really is changing the way we play and building it from the back and going about it in the right way. And the players look confident in what he's doing, which we can see, and then obviously translates to the fans. And yeah, and you just feel confident that it's going to work.
Indeed. I mean, obviously there will be tough games. I think as well, we do need to obviously caveat all this positivity, sorry to bring it down, with the fact that there will be tough results this season. There will be games where it doesn't work and Vieira's approach does get picked off maybe by a bigger team. We've got a very tough game on Saturday. But I think what we need to be doing, Kevin, is looking at the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is that this team is trying to progress to a different style. And we've seen examples on this Saturday against a very good team of where it is working. But there will be games this season where it doesn't and where we do maybe get a bit of a tonking. But really, it's all about, it's a bigger picture.
Well, we'll talk about the Liverpool game later, but I suspect our approach might be slightly different, because that's what I think, with the personnel that we've got, I think we have other ways to play. And it's going to be really interesting to see how we approach the Liverpool game. But the point about the confidence of the fans is an interesting one, because it kind of took an hour, really. I mean, Grace is absolutely right. After 10 minutes, you kind of think, I think we're going to get a point out of this. We're looking all right. But after an hour, you're having to, again, just turn to people around you and go, this is good, isn't it? Yeah. I am right here. And it's just like, it will take a bit of getting used to, because it's just a huge change to what we're used to, the sort of football that we're used to, which we accepted. And again, I'm perfectly happy to admit I was one of those people who said, look, it's a results-based business. We're getting enough wins to stay up. The performance is secondary, but my God, if you can get the result out of a performance like that, I'm much happier.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, let's, sorry to bring the mood down at the end there, but let's move on from that. So you can read that article by Matt and plenty more on Palace and lots of different clubs at The Athletic. And if you go to theathletic.com/FYP, that's theathletic.com/FYP, you can get 50% off your annual subscription to The Athletic. After the break, we've got something different.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Welcome back to the Fiverr Plan Podcast.
Hey.
It's that part of the show where we, and I purposely didn't say what it was because someone moaned on the BBS that you keep saying they're going to do this and then you do it for the patrons only. We're going to do our quick patron only bit where we're going to play winners and losers play. We're going to just do winners and losers feature. This is only for our patrons. If you'd like to hear who our winners and losers are, go to patreon.com/FYP podcast. If you're on the public feed now, you're going to hear a clip from Saturday's post-match pod with Rob, Adam and Nav. But if you do want to hear what our winners and losers are, sign up to our patron right now. So let's make that split now.
On the positive side, as the game wore on, we took the game to Tottenham and we were the better team in the first half. But I'm going to say that to you without working the goalkeeper, without making a glut of chances. Not that you're probably likely to against a big six team, but in fairness, I thought we were on the front foot asking the questions without working Lloris, and he wasn't flying around the goal repelling shots in that sense. But, you know, second half, after the early scare, their only real shot on target, I think, the one that Guaita held on to very well, very comfortably. After that, it was us, but without wanting to put a negative slant on it, I wasn't certain we were going to score until the penalty in that sense. I thought we had lots of pressure, we asked lots of questions, but still weren't turning them into what I would call great chances. Do you know, there weren't many moments up until the penalty where I'm saying, that should have been a goal, that should have been a goal, that should have been a goal. You know, but I thought we played very well without, in the final third, really carving them open or making Lloris work. So I think in that sense, you know, the penalty, as soon as it went in, it felt like a sort of massive relief, really, almost. And I said to the fellow that was with me, I think we can score three now. You know, I think that it will open up and we'll get chances. And we did. And, you know, again, Edson Edouard, you know, two goals with his first couple of touches and stuff. And again, as I say, the cards fell for us. I think the first one he didn't catch great, but it went just inside the post and wasn't savable. And the second one, you know, it's virtually, Lloris has got a lot of contact on the ball and it's still gone in. So he'll probably be a little bit disappointed, but we don't have to worry about any of those things too much. And we'll take 3-0 and it's great. And I think overall today was a huge result for the season. I said before the game, I was apprehensive on the basis that if we were well beaten, I think people would start to worry quite a lot and it could be quite damaging from a confidence perspective. But if we were to win, I think it would do wonders for the self-belief and everybody around it. And fortunately, we didn't just win, it was a resounding win, as you said, and we can look forward to the next couple of games with real positivity, you know, and it was good to do it in the manner that we did as well, you know, where we're on the front foot and we're really taking the game to Tottenham. It wasn't a sort of smash and grab situation. There were some very good, you know, displays, and Wilfried particularly looked very sharp, especially after the near sending off, where he found another gear after that and livened himself up another 10%, and things went all right for us.
Nav, you talked to me through the game, and at half time we were talking, and you said that it felt like the players are really adapting to what Vieira is asking them to do. Just talk us through that a little bit, and what your thoughts on the performance were as well.
Well, I thought the performance was probably the best Premier League performance that we've had that I can recall as a 90 minutes. There might have been some better results, but as an overall controlled performance, I thought that's probably the best I've ever seen us at this level. When I talk about the players buying into what Vieira is doing, it's kind of alludes to what Adam was saying earlier. He said that there was some clunky play at the back, but the players are trying it, they're doing it, and they clearly buy into it. They're repeating it, they're keeping the ball, they're not scared to go backwards, to try and go forwards. And we did have bits of luck that Adam talked about, but it's amazing that you get luck in forward areas when you're trying to do progressive things. And that's what we did today. And yeah, really good debut from Edouard, of course. largely because Benteke worked the defenders so hard for the previous like 70 or so minutes. But yeah, like I said, it was a really, really good performance of the whole team. Everyone, yeah, they was buying into it. MacArthur, Gallagher, everywhere in midfield. Kouyaté did his job. Milivojevic came on and moved the ball a bit quicker than Kouyaté. And all three subs had a sort of play in the goals. And I think kind of like an ideal 90 minutes for Palace, really.
It all kind of seemed to a lot of what we did seemed to come through Conor Gallagher. I thought he was, again, you can just see why Palace were so eager to sign him, because he gives us a little bit of that energy. But him and MacArthur together are just, they're almost like a young and an old version of each other, in that they're in opposition's faces, they're tracking back, they're pushing forward, they're kind of the engine room in that midfield. And then you've got everything else around it. And I thought Wilf, especially in the first half, I think he was very patient. I think there were clear moments of kind of hints of frustration. But in the second half, as Adam said, he just stepped it up a gear, didn't he? So the ticket fiasco, do we care today? I'm going to quickly answer that, very, very quickly. I think the ticket fiasco was a complete and utter mess. But in fairness to Palace, they worked tremendously hard after they realised there were issues, and they managed to get pretty much everybody into the stadium. From what I understand, no, that they didn't have anyone waiting outside the ground after kickoff. Now, maybe they did, it could well be that there were a few, but the stadium was full within a few minutes of kickoff, and it worked. Palace fans got into the ground. Once they had their tickets, it wasn't a problem. It just needs to be better next time.
I don't know what to the fans as well, though, because people turned up early. Yeah, the club asked them to, and they did it. Yeah. So the club sorted stuff out today, but the fans also turned up early to make it easy for everyone.
The only thing I will say is things do happen.
Right? I mean, as a person that runs a business, right, things do go wrong. You know what I mean? And everyone, I felt a bit sorry for the club last night, because I'm reading like late before I went to bed on social media, oh, this club's a shambles. It's an embarrassment. It's this. It's that. Well, Chelsea had to let 1,000 fans not go to the first game of the season because they didn't, you know, didn't have the seats in place. You know, the contractor. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants it to happen. It's just part and parcel. As Nav said, hopefully everyone was sensible, turned up early, and fixed the problem. You know, but I do, you know, again, what was slightly more concerning for me was there were quite a few empty seats in the corner of the half away and in the top tier of the Holmesdale today as well, which I was surprised to see for a game like Tottenham at home. You know, that was so I don't know how short it was of a full house, but that I wondered whether that was you know, as a result of the ticket situation outside, but in the end they just weren't filled.
I think it's just one of those things where we all that Palace fans ask generally is for communication about what to expect, and it's not difficult to manage our expectations. Just tell us what you're going to do, and tell us the time frame that you want to do that in, and do it. And this is the problem.
I think of Simon Jordan, where he said, it wouldn't matter if I signed Cristiano Ronaldo, someone would still write to me and say the hot dogs are shit.
The problem with Simon Jordan is he'd get someone else to pay for Cristiano Ronaldo, and then we'd end up going out of business. So there we are.
But again, you see, whether you like him or not, and I'm not his biggest fan, I have to tell you, again, as a business person, he still lost £40 million of his money putting it into Crystal Palace. Rightly or wrongly, Mark Goldberg the same. So they get stick, but they didn't intend to put Crystal Palace to the near the brink of extinction, and they basically lost their personal fortune doing so.
And I spoke with someone at Palace today and just said to them, like, I know for a fact that Palace wouldn't have wanted this situation to have worked out the way it did. The good thing is Palace fans got in, we got to see a great win, that's what matters ultimately. You've got an opportunity now to fix it before the Brighton game, let's make sure that we can do that.
Okay, well, guys, thank you very much for your winners and losers and patrons. We hope you enjoyed that. If you were listening on the public feed, you heard a clip from the Pod Expert, do sign up to patreon.com/FYP podcast to get those immediately after the games, full pod and the winners and losers section on the main pod. After the break, questions.
Hey, it's Jesse Kelly. Ronald Reagan famously once said, the nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Americans are losing faith in the banking system, and at the same time, the U.S. government could soon be headed toward a centralized banking system. How scary is that? How do you protect yourself as the government gets more involved in your life? For me, owning gold is one way. Having gold that I can see and touch makes me feel protected. Having a portion of your retirement in precious metals is another way to feel protected. I don't own crypto, I don't own NFTs, and I don't buy meme stocks. I don't invest in things I don't understand. If you are like me and want to feel safe, it's time to call my friends at the Oxford Gold Group.
Go to www.oxfordgoldgroup.com to learn more. Again, that's www.oxfordgoldgroup.com.
Una de las especies más peculiares del mundo latino es el Padreus protectorus, que vive colgado encima de sus hijos como un koala.
Vamos contigo por si le pasa algo a tu auto.
Mamá, voy a estar bien.
Pero este instinto sobreprotector se está extinguiendo, porque State Farm está ahí las 24 horas si los necesitas. Así que los padres finalmente están soltando a sus hijos a la naturaleza.
¡Nos mandas fotos!
Como un buen vecino, State Farm está ahí. Llama para obtener una cotización hoy.
Welcome back to the 5-Year Plan podcast.
Hey!
Lord, 395. It's question corner. And I use that word intentionally, Kevin, because the following people, JJ Penks. Hello, JJ.
Hi, JJ.
Actually, he's the only one who said it like this. We've had it embarrassingly. JJ Penks has put all in unison.
Have we turned the corner?
Have we turned the corner? Exactly. Stephen Gold, 82.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Stephen.
Have Spurs turned the wrong corner? Interesting interpretation of that. And Seki Eagle, aka Nathan. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, Nathan.
Has Steve and Dougie rebuilt the corner? So there we go. We got.
Steve will take credit for it, whatever happens. So Steve was visibly absent during the ticketing fiasco for 2 days.
Well, let's just say yes, they're rebuilding the corner as we speak. AJ Batts.
One of them has.
Hi, AJ. AJ Batts. Should we get our vaccine passports ready for Europe next season?
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. Paul King.
Hi, Paul.
Paul King is, I think this might be the worst hashtag that anyone's ever tried, but he's put, do I dare to dream? Hashtag Riviera Illusion. I don't think that works, Paul, but good effort. Thank you for trying. William Fortune.
Hi, William.
Hi, William.
Are we going to win the Champions League?
Almost certainly once we're in it.
Once we're in it. Right, some serious questions. Toby Kinder, 1962.
Hi, Toby.
Most complete Sellers performance since promotion? He's put only 2-1 v Man City, 3-1 v Liverpool, 3-0 v Arsenal. Run it close for me. Actually, the Arsenal game, Kevin, was the game that everyone in the Pawson's office was bringing up that it made them feel like. And in fact, that's the first game I thought of at the full time as well. Obviously, same score. But in terms of dominating a game, that was the game that sprung to mind for me.
Yeah, we did dominate the game, but in a way, it's hard to explain. We dominated it in a different way. We were physical, we were strong, we got the ball forward very quickly, and it was a performance that we hadn't really seen before. It was nowhere near as complete, you know. It's just in terms of how quickly we moved the ball and how well everybody played. For me, it is the best performance in the Premier League. It's no, you know, even the Liverpool game, the 3-1, it's like we were outplayed for quite some periods of that game. You know, it's in terms of just playing really well for 90 minutes, it's better than all those ones that have just been mentioned, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Mike Wicks, who's obviously one of the FYP team, hi Mike, has said, where does this rank amongst our best ever Premier League performance, especially given how dominant we were and the quality of the opposition? So, Grace, I'm going to come to you for that, but also before that, ask you, do you think this was our best ever Premier League performance?
I think so, yes. And like Kevin said, the Arsenal one obviously has to be up there, and that was special as well. But the Tottenham game, like you say, I can't recall a game where we were as dominant almost from start to finish as we were, and at the point where it was still 0-0 and we'd been on top for all that time, it would have felt like such an injustice if we had only got a point from the game. And it's been a while since we felt like that, and I said before the game that I was worried that if they got one, the floodgates would open, and I was talking about Spurs, and then it ended up being us instead. So that was a nice one to be wrong on. But yeah, it had it all, really. And yeah. I can't think of another Premier League game that came close.
No, I just mention, JD, in the unlikely event there is anybody over 35 listening to this, can I just mention the fact that there were games before the Premier League. We beat Man United 5-0, for example.
Yeah.
You know, when we beat Ipswich 4-1 to go top of the table, you know, that we have played football before and had dominant performances. So yeah, just I say that for the three people roughly my age who will treat me afterwards to say thank you. They're the legacy fans as well.
Right? Yeah, and one of them's in Andy's house right now.
It turns out the correlation between age and legacy fan is quite a close one.
that is a very good point. But we'll stick to Premier League because that's what people have asked. Andy, where does it rank for you?
Second.
Behind.
Second behind the 2-2 draw that we had against Bournemouth at home, where Benteke risked the penalty off, because statistically that's the one where we had the highest XG margin in comparison to the opposition.
Now would you like to do a serious answer now?
That was a serious answer.
That was a very serious answer. Annoying, but serious.
Statistically driven. Obviously we don't remember the draw that we definitely should have won as much as that one. But in all seriousness, I mean, that does go to show quite how good a performance it was, that when you look at something that is quite objective like that, you do get 3-0s and 3-0s, don't you? You get somewhere you're like, how on earth have we won that game 3-0? Yeah. And then this one, you actually look at the margin based on the chances created, and it wasn't far off what it should have been. And so, yeah, I mean, that obviously the point there as well is, much as I'm being facetious, Bournemouth are not the calibre of, and weren't then, the calibre of opposition that Spurs are now and have been full time that we've been in the Premier League. So I think just based on that alone, and yes, Tottenham does have to be the top one.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm grateful for making a point about it 0-0. It would have been an injustice. Harry Kane has such a good record against Palace, especially at Selhurst. In fact, he scored in four of the previous six games at Selhurst. And yet I wasn't ever really worried he was going to pop up with a goal. And obviously we've read that stat out earlier. And in fact, the XG, I know Kevin loves the XG. The XG at halftime was something like Palace 0.3 or something, Spurs 0.00. I mean, it was flat zero. And again, you know, the team of that quality, or even just a play, we know what Kane can do for that team, just a player of that quality, to have that kind of stat, I think it's pretty outstanding for Palace.
Yeah, he's the player who misses Son the most, though, because it only really works. It really annoys me when Kane plays so deep for England, but I was really pleased to see him play there for Tottenham.
Yeah.
Because it only really works, Kane playing that deep, when he's got Son as that with that pace for the Kane to hit the ball over the back four and then try and join him. It just seems a really odd way of using, as Andy Cook said, arguably one of the top two strikers in the world. It seems a really odd way of using him, that he spends more time in the halfway line than he does in the 18-yard box.
Yeah, and his manager currently could have nearly was our manager. I don't know, but you never know. So a bit of a sliding doors moment there for Palace this summer. We've had lots of questions about the sort of squad and how we fit the players that are out of the current 11 into it, including Eze and Elise. But I feel like that's a question for future pods, but it is a nice, we touched in part one, it's a nice problem to have. So I'm going to concentrate on another player that one of you, I can't remember who mentioned earlier, and that is James McArthur, who continues to sort of defy age and defy everything. And this season, I think, has possibly been his best start to a Palace season, really. He's been absolutely superb. Bloke Ocean.
Hi, Bloke.
Hi, Bloke.
Said, sure it's not Blake.
It is Bloke. It sounds like a terrible nightclub, doesn't it? But Bloke Ocean has said, is it time for us to... are you ready for another pun? Is it time for us to call Jimmy Imac? Imac, you looked. Imac, nice. M-A-C. Yeah, it's better than the previous
one. I think we would have got it without you explaining it.
I'd just like to put thanks on the same page. Performances against Brentford and Tottenham and his leadership. Admittedly, we were very drunk at the time, but it made us laugh. Okay, well, thank you. I should have read that before first. Really. I mean, Kevin, he's been absolutely superb, hasn't he? And I think maybe, probably the sort of player that before the recruitment or even after the recruitment decision, you might have lost out. But he's undroppable at the moment.
I'm 100% certain he was going to lose out. But as you say, he'll start against Liverpool unless he's not fit. He's been he's been superb, and he's just, again, he seems to have energy levels that he's never fully shown in the past. He just covered, I mean, him and Gallagher, we barely mentioned Gallagher as well in this pod, who was superb. And like I say, the cover that Matt gave to not only the sort of the fullbacks, but Wilf was brilliant. And I was so impressed about how quickly he got up to join Wilf as often as possible, just like I say, to protect and defend him, but also to make himself an option. We seem constantly in the last game and a half to have options for the players. Players look up and they've got two or three Palace players around them. And also, Jimmy, some of his tackling was just fantastic. I think it was a tackle. I can't remember, one of his tackles led to the one that ends, but it was just really superb. Close tackling as well, and not giving yellow cards away like he was prone to in the past. So he's another one, along with Wardy, you kind of think, well, hats off to the management team who clearly saw something there that made them first choice in that position. And I'm really fascinated to see who he picks for the Liverpool game. I'd be really interested to ask Vieira what his first choice midfield three was, because I really can't predict it. Because I like, if you remember, after the last pod, I said I was 100% certain that Will Hughes would start against Spurs. I was convinced he would, and it didn't get on. So he's yet another option. But Jimmy Mack's been brilliant.
And Stelzi made another good point in the post-match pod, actually. He was saying, when people say, oh, the manager doesn't know his first 11, it's seen as a negative. But actually, it should be seen as a positive.
Because
it proves how many options you have. And I think that is exactly the case at the moment with Vieira. And actually, Grace, I hadn't noticed until the photos of the game after that Macca was captain on Saturday. And I don't know if that's the first time he was captain. I'm not sure. But actually, he's ideal captain material. And in fact, when you think about that team, him, Wilf, Anderson, Luca when he's on. Actually, we've talked before on this podcast a lot about a lack of sort of leaders and captains in that team. Actually, we are starting to get a real bunch now.
We are, yeah, and it's good. And Jimmy Mack, if he's not been captain before, I'm not sure how that's happened, because I mean, his attitude since day one he's been at Palace seems to have been fantastic, and he's just always been happy to sort of throw himself in there, get stuck in, but also is one of the first to run over if someone else is getting themselves in trouble, or in the way that you want your captain to do, but also to lead and to know when to tell those players, if it's say Wilf or someone, to calm down and stop reacting and make sure they stay on the pitch. But yeah, even in his absence, I mean, we've seen Wilf as captain, and we know that he's capable, obviously brings a sort of different dimension to the role. I'd feel equally as confident with Anderson at the back, which is a nice problem for Vieira to have after, like you say, for a while we thought we had a real sort of lack of leadership.
Yeah,
you know what I thought was really pleasing, we talked about this after the game, was when the Wilf Tanganga incident happened, every single Palace player got involved. Whereas in the past, four or five of them were just going, oh, Wilf's at it again, and just left him to it. But all of them, there was a real kind of unity there as well, to the extent I don't like it when keepers don't join in. I want them all joining in. And when commentators say we don't want to see scenes like this, yes, we do. It's one of the reasons we go to football. We're desperate to see scenes like that.
Well, even Mitchell was getting involved in some of the first players, pointing at Mitchell. I was like, you can't do that. He's 13 years old.
But God bless him. He really shouldn't have got involved. He wasn't doing much. But probably it was scrappy do, wasn't he?
Totally. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
No, you like to see it. Right, let's end on a question here from S. Channon.
Hi, yes.
Who says, is Emma Raducanu a secret Palace fan? Obviously, she won the US Open at the weekend, which was fantastic. She's from Bromley/Orpington, I think. And she did play in red and blue as well. So we have no idea if she's a Palace fan. But Kevin, I think it's only right that we give her a shout out. An unbelievable achievement for her. And a big thumbs up for South London. What a weekend for South London.
Fantastic achievement for South London, and fantastic achievement for everyone's favourite, who we'd never heard of until Friday. Essentially,
well, we're gonna assume she's a Palace fan. We're gonna claim.
Remarkable achievement, brilliant. I mean, not even Gary Lineker said halfway through Match of the Day that she'd won, and that it was an inspiration. I'm not entirely sure. I'm not saying you couldn't move around my way for teenage girls dragging six line judges in a high chair over Norbury Park on Sunday, but no, well done.
Really come to the wrong person on the podcast.
Sorry, I was just channeling my inner streety there. It's fun, isn't it? It's fun being Andy Street.
Grumpy.
I watched all of it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, Russell Howard likes tennis as well.
God,
nothing wrong with tennis.
That would be such a nice way to end of part two.
All right, we'll edit that bit out and go, yeah, brilliant. Well done, Emma. Well done, South London. Fantastic.
It was superb. I really enjoyed it, and I don't watch tennis very often, but I thought it was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, you're dressed for playing it today.
I am a bit, actually, yeah.
You've got a seedy junior tennis coach look about you.
Oh, come on, let's not bring the tone down. Thankfully, people can't see that on radio anyway. Right, what a fantastic way to end part four. Let's take a break, and after the break, really quick preview of Liverpool away.
Thank you for calling Vast National Bank. How may I transfer you?
Yeah, wait, did you just say transfer?
No, I said help. How may I help you?
Never mind. I have a question about my account.
Okay, let me transfer you to accounts.
Hey, what?
Don't let a big bank make you feel small. How about a community bank? Shake your phone to find yours or learn more at banklocally.org.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA. PenFed's got great rates for everyone.
Podcast.
Hey.
Pod 395, Liverpool away at the weekend. Grace, we've beaten the league leaders. Actually, are they league leaders now?
No, they're not.
United, aren't they? Sorry. Yeah. Well, we've beaten two league leaders in a row. We might as well go to Liverpool and get beaten as well. Sorry, we've drawn, and I am falling apart at the end of this video. We've drawn against West Ham. We've beaten Spurs. Surely this will be a comfortable away win.
I mean, yeah, what could possibly go wrong? Yeah, no, it'll be a tough one, as it always is on a trip to Anfield, isn't it? And they'll be their usual buoyant selves after Salah hit the century mark. And I think Mane is not far off, and we know that he loves a goal against us more than any other player. So it'll be interesting to see how we take the confidence from the Spurs result and how it translates and how Vieira sets us up, and if he does do anything differently to combat the many options that Liverpool have with the likes of Alexander-Arnold and his overlapping runs and crosses in the box. But I mean, if we play as well as we did against Spurs, then I don't see any reason why we can't get something from it.
And just quickly then, before I come on to the other two, Dougie Keeley. Kylie.
Oh, we got us excited there.
Sorry, Dougie. Dougie, Keely, Kylie. I apologize, I got that wrong. Edward starts with Tekkers playing it down to him. Oh, it sounds like a front two. What would you do with Edward versus Benteke, Grace?
It's a tough one. It is a tough one because, like we said, Benteke did so much of the hard work on Saturday and basically did everything except score, which is sort of a bit of a common theme, but I'm a long-standing defender of Benteke. I think he brings so much to the team that doesn't always get picked up in the goal stats. But then it is hard to look past Edouard coming on and scoring two goals in the way that he did. So I'm not envious that Vieira is the one that's got the decision to make. Just have to see what he does.
Kevin, what would you do if you were? You are Patrick. This is like you are the ref. You are Patrick Vieira.
I think Matt Woosner mentioned right at the very start of the Athletic article that there were one or two eyebrows raised that it was an unchanged team from West Ham that IU started. I suspect that he might start with the same team. I'd be surprised. I think Benteke will start. I think the result on Saturday gives us some breathing space. I mean, if we'd lost on Saturday, we'd be terrified of the Liverpool game because you'd say, right, so I have 3 points written off. But it's given us a bit of mid-table respectability and it almost a bonus. My one worry is I do fear for Wardy in this sort of game where the opposition have got pace and energy all over the pitch. And Liverpool were brilliant against Leeds on Sunday. Absolutely outstanding. Having said that, West Ham had been outstanding against Leicester before we played them, and Tottenham were unbeaten. So I'll be interested to see what the approach is, because it would be quite a ballsy approach if Vieira tries to be as positive on the front foot. So I've got a feeling the first half will be similar to South. I think that's how Patrick wants to play against the bigger teams, that he'll try and keep them quiet first half, hold the ball for as much as possible, then see what we can do second half. But I think it will be an unchanged team, and I think that probably includes Ayew as well. Well, it would do, because it's an unchanged team. But it's one of those. I'm actually excited about playing Liverpool rather than terrified. Yeah, and we've probably got more points at this stage of the season than most of us thought we would have, to be honest. If you'd offered us 5 points at the start of the season, then you'd assume that would be beating Brentford and picking up 2 points from the other teams.
Yeah.
I think the approach will be different to the Chelsea games. I think Vieira learned from the Chelsea game that cautious, old-style Palace approach isn't the way to beat the bigger teams. I think we'll have probably more of the ball. But yeah, I am excited. And Edouard will get on at one stage.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think it'll actually be an unchanged team as well. Although, Andy, as you said, that's very harsh on Edouard after that introduction. What are you expecting from Palace on Saturday?
I think it'll be a lot more contained than Saturday. Liverpool are a different echelon of team than Spurs. They are phenomenally intense in the press. They come at you time and time and time again. They can spring counters, or they can press you really, really high up. They seize on mistakes, and they got in Salah and Mane, two of the best finishers in the league. Vieira is a smart footballing guy. He's going to know that. So I don't think it's going to be one where we'll be taking huge risks with the ball all the time in our own third. Albeit, I think that he'll try and do similar to what we did against Chelsea, where we do try and string some passes across the back. If we were to make any changes, I would have thought it would probably be in the centre of the park to add a bit more ballast to, you know, either swap in Luka for maybe Jimmy Mack, but that would be pretty harsh, or maybe to give Kiarte a week off and bring in either Luka or Gyro. But equally, I think it would be, you know, slightly aggressive in some ways to change a team that's come off such a good result as the Tottenham one. So I would expect us to sit a tiny bit deeper, and I'm a little bit fearful of them because they are an exceptionally good team, and if you try to go toe-to-toe with Liverpool in a football match, then you're bound to come off the worst. But even if we did come off the worst, I mean, ultimately, you can come off 4-0 against Liverpool at Anfield by playing really defensively, or you can come off against by playing really attacking. Frankly, it just depends what sort of Liverpool team you come up against. Hopefully they have an off day in the same way that Tottenham did.
Well, all the pundits always say that the best way to beat the press is just to miss it out completely and play long balls over the top. And we've got,
and that's why I'd go with Benteke.
But exactly, and we've got a centre back in Anderson who can do just that. We haven't had that option before, and that's why again I think Benteke will start. I think as well, it's quite early in Edouard's Premier League career to start him against a Liverpool team that is so physical and energetic. I mean, his fitness levels will need to catch up a little bit, I suspect. He hadn't played a lot of football before he came to us, which is another reason why I think Benteke will, you know, because you're talking about going up against Van Dijk, who's, you know, one of the best centre-backs in the world. So I think Benteke will get that role first of all, certainly in the first half. But I think you will see us try and beat the press with Anderson knocking the ball over the top for Wilf as often as possible.
Well, after your prediction that Will Hughes will start against Palace, I'm fully expecting Mateta to line up on Saturday at Anfield. None of us know what we're talking about. I do think, actually, though, the Spurs game, I think, takes the pressure off Saturday massively. And I think we can go without worrying too much. And as you said, those points in the bag change everything from where we are now. So a good
5 more wins.
Nine more wins. And that is the name of this week's podcast. So thank you, Andy, for giving me the title. Now, a good place for us all to be in, Palace-wise. And a good place to end the podcast there, I think, as well. So, Grace, thank you so much for coming on and joining us. Absolutely brilliant having you, and hope you come back soon.
Thank you for having me, gladly.
Fantastic. Andy, great to see you as well. And say our regards to Barry as well.
He's gone now. Oh. Heard you guys talking, I'm afraid. Said I've had enough for the day.
And Kevin, so I mean, there's no one else with you in your shed, but just thank you to you.
Why is my status company wise of any interest?
Just because Andy's got, you know, support staff behind him. So
my family are all out playing tennis.
And now I have to leave that bit in, so it won't make sense. Guys, thanks so much for joining us. Thank you for listening. Thank you to our patrons for supporting us. And if you want to join our patron, it's patreon.com/FYP podcast. And thank you to The Athletic for their support this week. Visit theathletic.com/FYP for 50% off your sub to The Athletic. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll see you again next week. Bye.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Social Podcast Network.